Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Dominic Mitchum and Robert Combs join me, or I join them, on Capshaw Mountain in Alabama with a brand new transmitter installation. Plus, Chris Tarr has some really good advice on installing, buying, selecting new or used transmitters. That's all coming up next on Torts.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com.
By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee, in the Telos Alliance studio. And my goodness, it's looking like springtime. I know it is springtime. It's been meteorological spring since March 1st. It's been spring since March 21st or so. So we're a week into it. And we finally have a beautiful, warm day. The sun's shining. I'm so happy. My solar system on the roof has been cranking out the power today. We actually sold power back to the power company almost all day today, although the sun now is waning. Hey, anyway, enough about that. Glad you're here with us, and let's check in with Chris Tarr, where it's sunny in Mukwonago. Hey, Chris. Hi.
It is, although I don't think that Wisconsin got the memo yet about spring.
Really?
It's we're in that weird part of the year up here where, you know, the days are warm and the nights are freezing. So, you know, it's 44 right now. It got up to 50 the other day, but then it's like 27, 26 at night. So we're still kind of at that spot. And then it takes a while in the day to get really warm. So in the morning, it's still like 30 degrees. So hopefully another few weeks, we'll start to see those nights, because we're getting spoiled. We had a couple of those days where they were in the 60s and we're getting spoiled. You know, because even in the 40s, I'll wear shorts outside because, you know, Wisconsin. But I'm waiting for spring to actually get here would be nice.
I noticed that I was watching the power usage on the house here, and I noticed, hey, why did it bump up to 4.5 kilowatts? Now 6 kilowatts. What is the air conditioner? Both air conditioners are on at the same time. Sure enough, the air conditioning kicked on. I'm going to have to go.
Oh, yeah.
Diddle with the set points. I need to save some more electricity. Chris, our topic today is talking about transmitters that are either brand new or new to me. And I love it when a plan or when an impromptu plan comes together. Last week, I got word. Well, actually, I saw it on Facebook that Robert Combs and Dominic Mitchum were installing a new transmitter. A 30 kilowatt Harris, a Fax 30, maybe, just north of Huntsville, Alabama, for the Cumulus cluster in Huntsville. And I thought, that's just down the road. I mean, that's okay. It's just about a 2-hour drive. I thought, sure, I'm going to see if they're still going to be there. So I got in the car on Friday afternoon, zoomed down there, and had a great conversation and took video. We did a whole interview and B-roll video. It's better than a live show. At least, yeah, it's going to be.
I'm sure of it. Coming up. I'm absolutely sure of it.
And you know, Robert Combs. If you guys don't know Robert Combs, this man is so full of wisdom. He's an old soft shoe at this kind of stuff. You know, he has installed 60 transmitters in the last 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot. Wow. I asked him, I said, well, you're putting this big, you know, this big Harris transmitter. You do other ones? He said, oh yeah, we use all the major manufacturers, just whichever is appropriate, sure, for the power level, the size, the airflow. And sometimes it's price dependent, you know, sometimes, hey, which one am I going to buy?
And I think that's pretty common. You know, people ask, well, what, you know, what do you buy? Well, I buy whatever works for the job, you know, and some of that is price. Some of that is features at any given moment. You know, at one point I'd bought some Gates Air faxes because At that time, the feature set was a little bit ahead of what Nautella is doing. Now Nautella has a new transmitter out that has some of those features. So it really is, you know, I'm not sold on any one brand. And I think it's, I don't think it's a good idea to do that. I think you want the manufacturers to kind of compete with each other, you know, not only for your business, but for, you know, business in general, because I think that just, again, that the rising tide lifts all the boats. So, you know, to get to keep them on their toes, I think is great.
The only expensive thing you should be really loyal to would be your wife.
Exactly.
That'd be a good idea. Hey, Chris, we're going to talk about Nautel and the Nautel Users Group Radio Technology Forum coming up at NAB. If you're going to be anywhere near Las Vegas, well, you're probably going to NAB if you're near it. But anyway, you shouldn't miss the Nautel Radio Technology Forum, or the NUG, the Nautel Users Group is what it has been called. It's going on Sunday morning, April the 14th in Las Vegas. Starts at 8:30 in the morning. They're going to serve a lunch, 8:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. It's at the Flamingo Las Vegas in the Scenic and Twilight Ballrooms. And I think that's where they've been having it. They're going to have their industry briefing breakfast at 8:30. So they're serving breakfast there. They're going to have the full session from 8:30 till 1. I think their first people are talking while you're eating. And then they'll have the optional afternoon sessions about HD radio. If you're new to HD radio or you need a little brush up, HD radio 101 and AUI, advanced user interface, and you can find out what all those squiggly lines on your Nautel transmitter mean. So what you need to do is register for this. It's free to register. The whole thing is free of charge. You don't have to dress up. You can dress comfortably, or you can dress up. It's up to you. There's a link to register. You just go to the Nautel website, nautel.com. The full link is nautel.com/NAB/NUG-registration. That's too much to remember, at least for me anyway. So just go to the Nautel website. You'll see it there easily. You can register for free, and they'll save you a place. They'll order extra pancakes and sausage and eggs for you, and you can enjoy this thing. I've been to several of these. Really good. It is action-packed. Well, it's information-packed. Let's hope there's not too much action. And then after you're finished with that, then you can go to the NAB show floor. All right. Hope to see you there. Chris, do you have a chance to come to NAB this year or not?
No, I will not be there. I've got, you know, I still got a lot of stuff going on. We're winding down now, but we're still have a few more tricks up our sleeves.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to the Public Radio Engineering Conference. I'll be presenting something there. And also the SBENS workshop is before the NAB starts. So actually, I think I'm speaking twice there. Jeff Welton is in charge of one day, and he asked me to speak. And I'm speaking another day, too. So anyway, there you go. All right, that's coming up. Register for that from Nautel. All right, Chris, without further ado, let's take a look at this video. Let's go ahead and roll the video. I'm going to talk over the first few seconds of it here, if you want to do that, Suncast. So this is the drive up the hill. They said, bring your four-wheel drive, although, frankly, they had improved the road. The road was terrible, and they got the landowners, there's me, got the landowners to put gravel, improve the whole road. But they had a couple of big rainstorms that already started digging new bad places in the road. Watch this. Such a card. All right. And up the hill we go. It's a windy road up the hill. It's not bad, though. It's not too terribly steep. Fun to drive, actually. There are several towers at the top of this hill. They call it Capshaw Mountain. Well, it's not what some people would define as a mountain, but they call it a mountain. Capshaw Mountain sounds more impressive than Capshaw Hill. So there's a bumpy part right there where the rain had already eaten through part of the road. And lots of telephony boxes. Fiber up on the hill. We'll talk about that as we get into it here. I guess this is where the new gravel stops and the original gravel continues. Still, it wasn't too bad. More utility boxes. And one more transmitter building. And I will be quiet from this point. Here we go. Pulling into the transmitter building, along into Cumulus.
Hey, it's Kirk Harnack along with Dominic and Robert. And we are here
in Huntsville, Alabama, just outside of Huntsville, on a hill. And Dominic, you're the local engineer. Tell me about this hill. Where are we exactly?
Well, the locals here call it Capshaw Mountain. Now, mountain would be something that's 20,000 feet or more high. This is like 440 feet, so Capshaw Mountain.
Capshaw Mountain, and it's kind of crowded up here.
It is crowded if you're in a communications business. Right here, we've got radio and television, and just down the road is a major cell tower with a lot of carriers on it.
Well, we're here because Robert Combs is here, and he posted on Facebook a few days ago about a new transmitter installation. And I said, hey, that's just down the road from me, road trip, and I get to see Robert, too. So, Robert, good to see you, and tell me why you're here.
Well, as the corporate director of engineering for Cumulus, I travel around helping with installs, studios, transmitters, and I'm pretty much the transmitter guy for Cumulus. And I deal with the manufacturers, I deal with the installs, I deal with everything pertaining to it. So.
Now, you told me earlier that you've got kind of a variety of different transmitter brands and sizes depending on pricing and power required and all that kind of thing. Now, you said you have installed a lot of these Gates Air transmitters.
Yes. This was number 60.
60?
60. Since 2016 or 2015.
Oh, my goodness. So, well, that's almost 10 a year, right?
Pretty close.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. All right. So, tell me about the licensed facilities here. Seems like a pretty high TPO here.
Well, here, originally, the license is for a 54-kilowatt TPO because we had a four-bay antenna at 650 feet. So at the time, we had two 30-kilowatt transmitters combined to make 54 kilowatts, and it's a 100,000-watt radio station.
Okay.
So we are now going back to running just one transmitter, which our TPO will be 27 kilowatts. We're working on the CP now.
Yeah.
But we're running under an STA, which we filed an STA with the FCC, to run it, reduce power. We have an antenna, which you'll be able to show them here, sitting in a box, ready to go. And we're going to replace the auxiliary antenna at the same time, because right now we have a 10-bay Phelps Dodge, is older than I am.
Wow.
So we're going to put a four-bay ERI up for that as well.
Now, Robert, as he should have, used a lot of acronyms in describing what's going on here. And most of you in our audience know what those acronyms mean. I'm going to go back over a couple of TPO. That's transmitter power output. This is what your FCC license says. How much power can I put out of the transmitter? And that power on your license takes into account two more things beyond the transmitter. The type and length of transmission line, because you're going to lose a little bit of power as heat in the transmission line. And it has to do with the gain of the antenna. Now, Robert, you said that right now you still have, and you have had a four-bay antenna.
Four-bay antenna.
And that's got a gain of a little over 2.0, right?
Right about, we usually, for every two bays, it's around a gain of one.
Yeah.
So a four-bay would be a gain of two, and we're going with an eight-bay, which will be right above four.
So the antenna that's up there now, four-bay antenna, gain of two. You got to put 50,000 watts in the bottom of the antenna, or in the middle of it, wherever it is, to get 100,000 watts of effective power out. When you replace that antenna with the eight-bay, it only requires half of that actual power, right?
We'll be doing 27 kilowatts out is what our math is doing, if our math is mathing right.
Yeah. And you'll lose a little bit in the transmission line.
Right. We will lose, it's 700 feet of 3-inch line, 3 1/8.
Now, we're standing here in front of this operating transmitter, and it's putting out how much right now, 27 and a half?
We're doing 15,
oh, 15
out of it right now. The STA is, we put in for running at 30% of our licensed power.
Okay.
So we're with line loss, we'll be right around 28 kilowatts out, but that way we're okay. The FCC knows we're doing it, and we're not operating illegally. So.
Gotcha. But when the new antenna goes up with a higher gain, then you'll be able to put out your full 100 kilowatt of effective power.
Right, and you'll be able to hear it at your house in Nashville.
Yeah. I live a two-hour drive up the road. I know because
I just drove it.
this site, you said, Kirk, you may want to bring a four-wheel drive with you. So I got to try out the four-wheel drive on the 25-year-old Toyota 4Runner. You know, it's not a bad road, though, really.
We just, the owner of this tower, we sold the tower to someone, and we asked them, knowing we were going to bring all this up, to fix the road last year, and they did a great job.
Now, Dominic, you were responsible for taking the transmitter that was sitting here out. Tell me about that process of decommissioning a transmitter, which really, it could stand alone, but it was actually half of a pair of transmitters.
Yes, that's right. So right over here is an HT30, the Harris HT30.
Yep.
It was there was a separate cabinet just like it right behind where I'm standing.
Okay.
And it was connected in with that cabinet to a combiner unit. And so as part of the planning, what went into this whole project here, the idea was to isolate that transmitter only to the main antenna and then dismantle the other cabinet over here and its power supply. Behind us is that big power supply with a big hunk of iron in it. There was a separate power supply for that. And so once we got the plan in place there, we dismantled that and then basically had a moving company come in and pick up the hard, heavy iron and haul it away, and at the same time bring in this new box, which is actually lighter and takes up far less room, maybe about half. And as you can see, it's operating.
Now, if the 30-kilowatt tube-type transmitter went away, and you said the power supply for it also went away, right?
Yes.
And I'm guessing the combiner also went away.
Yes, it did. And in order to make room for what we are bringing in here with the new antenna and, of course, the new transmitter, we had to get rid of those parts. There was no need for the combiner since we're going to use one transmitter into a bigger antenna, which extra bays, as Robert pointed out. So it was not necessary to have that here. So as part of the project to dismantle, we dismantled that as well.
I want to go back and explain one more concept that a lot of stations, I think maybe when electricity was cheaper, it's often been felt by engineers that the fewer FM bays, kind of the better. And there's two reasons for that. If you have a lot of bays, an antenna with a lot of gain, well, you've got a main lobe coming out of it, but you've also got all these little side lobes above and below. And they can create some areas of difficult reception, at least in the vicinity of the tower. Or if you've got some of your listening area is at a lower elevation, like if you're on a mountain and you're trying to hit a city and you've got this scalloping a signal level from a multi-bay antenna, that can be problematic. So the thought has often been fewer bays gives you a fatter signal that goes out. And there's some truth to that. It's not always important, but sometimes it is important. And the other factor, though, is the fewer the bays up there, the fewer the parts that are up there, and the fewer things to go wrong up there. And fixing things up there costs more money, because you got to get a tower crew out and all the accoutrement that goes along with that. Now, in my humble opinion, you know, four-bay antenna is great, but, man, you spend a lot of money on electricity down here at the bottom when you're trying to pump out 100,000 watts. An eight-bay antenna, which is what you're going to put up, I think that's a pretty good compromise. I don't mind having eight bays up in the air for 100-kilowatt signal. How do you feel about all that?
To me, the eight-bay antenna is the best.
Uh-huh.
It's the perfect number of bays to me, because you still get great building penetration, because that's another reason to go with less bays, because it's more RF, therefore better building penetration. But you still get great building penetration, but you can also get the distance with an 8-bay. And like you said, less electricity on the ground. So
there's one more factor we haven't mentioned, and maybe you've done this at some other sites. I take it the new antenna is going to be a full wave spaced antenna. Gaining some popularity for the last 20 years or so has been these half-wave spaced antennas, especially when you've got people or apartments or things like that below the antenna. A half-wave space has less gain, lots of parts up there, but a lot less downward radiation. I take it here on this mountaintop with nobody else
the public is not in here. That's not a real factor, is it?
That's right. We're isolated at the top. There are houses below at the foot of the mountain, but everything else up here is RF already. So, and it's tall enough tower where our RFR, the radiation on the ground level, is still within standards.
Yeah, I guess if we were on a real mountaintop site with a 100-foot tower with an 8-bay antenna on that, that gets problematic when the bottom bay is not too far away from you.
Yeah, when you go up out to L.A., Mount Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, Bruno in San Francisco, and, yeah, you can touch the bottom bay of the antenna. You got to watch it there, but here we're okay.
So, Dominic, you used to have two transmitters here operating in parallel, and I understand, you correct me if I'm wrong or add to it, you got one FM exciter, and that signal is split to both transmitters. There's an adjustment on the timing of at least of one of those to get your phase corrected. Each transmitter amplifies that signal from the same exciter, and then they combine back together, hopefully in good phase, and so the power from both goes up the tower. Now, have that right?
Yes, you're exactly right. I practically, you've explained everything pretty much in good principle. So, you know, that the once that signal is split and the phase is monitored by the transmitter's phase controller, and it's comparing that to what the output is doing to keep the two in phase or in check so that one transmitter doesn't run away as with, from the other one and keeps both balanced with the same output power levels. And also just that phase is important for the balance of the coupling of the transmitter so one is not canceling out the other.
Sure, sure. You know, that's more sophisticated than I've ever dealt with. Robert, you still have some dual transmitter systems in the company, don't you?
We just did a couple of years ago. I did a 60 kilowatt in Nashville because we had the situation. We got a 4-bay antenna at top of a 1,000-foot tower. And so we needed, I think we were doing 48 out of that transmitter. So we basically, there's 230, two of this one combined with a controller. And it has the electronic phasing and combiner and all that. Of course, you have two dummy loads hooked to it because you're wasting, you've got a lot of heat coming out of that one. So
I think I visited that site maybe in the mid-90s, and I want to say there were two CCA transmitters there at the time.
Well, I took out two HT25s.
Oh, wow.
So they had replaced the CCAs.
Okay.
I did see the carcass of one. Yeah. It was there. It's not anymore, but it was there.
And now those old CCAs, there was no automatic adjustment. There was a little trombone section to adjust the phasing. So I guess you adjust that, for the minimum reject power on the combiner.
Right. You that was the way the HTs were.
Oh.
There at the same time, they had a big complex network, 3-inch line going everywhere, 6-inch coming out. But yes, you had to, it's just like tuning an AM almost.
Yeah.
But you had to get it perfect.
But now they make them with automatic transmission.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. All you do is put it in drive and go.
All right. That is the first part of our interview. We've got part two coming up for you in just a minute after the break. I'm Kirk Harnack. Chris Tarr is going to be rejoining us with some stories of his own in just a few minutes. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 689th episode, so glad you're here. Hey, and while we have a moment together, if you don't mind, would you like and subscribe if you haven't already? Make sure if you're watching on YouTube, you know, subscribe to our channel, like the video. That's really appreciated. Same thing if you're on Facebook, you know, like the video. We have an actual channel on Facebook, This Week in Radio Tech, Tort This Week in Radio Tech. When we're doing the live show, we just share the video that comes from GFQ Network, guys from Queens. That's the company that distributes and produces our show. So anyway, if you would take care of that, I would really appreciate it. Thank you. All right, coming up, part two in just a few minutes, or just a couple minutes. Right now, we're going to hear a word from my friends and your friends at a business that they make stuff to make producing great radio easier and all the social media that needs to go along with that in today's world. It's Broadcast Bionics. We'll be right back.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics, designed to bring video to your audio content, visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature, or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Adam GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
Pretty cool stuff, Camera One. And you know, there's various systems that switch cameras for you. Camera One has so many cool features that you'll actually use, especially when you post to social media. Check it out from Broadcast Bionics at bionics.co.uk or bionic.radio. There's links in the show notes if you want to find out more about that. And as an engineer, you can really be a hero to your broadcasting company by encouraging adoption of this kind of technology. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack. Chris Tarr will be back in a few minutes. And we're watching this interview I had with Robert Combs and Dominic Mitchum, and it's about installing this new transmitter. So part two is here now. We got lots more video and B-roll to show you what's going on there. Let's roll it, Suncast.
Kind of tell me about this Gates Air transmitter that's gone in here. It's not, I know we're raising our voice a bit, but it's quieter than a tube transmitter, I believe.
Oh, yes. It does have high-speed fans. If there's a problem, you walk in the door, you'll know it because you can't hear anything. But this is basically three 10-kilowatt power blocks combined.
Yeah.
You have two in this one cabinet, which is fed by the exciter,
Okay. Which
there's a combiner for them. And then you have a third one here that is also then combined with these other two.
Yeah.
And then it comes, has the output that comes out. With these transmitters, of course, there is no harmonic filter on the external. It's
really?
All inside.
Oh, it's inside. Okay.
Everything's inside. The exciter is the brain. Yeah, you connect all the audio through it. This first power block is the brain of the three.
Yeah.
So there's ribbon cables coming from all three into that, the first one, to where it will tell you if there's a problem with one, and it sort of controls everything. And of course, with the Gates Air stuff, as with most of it now, you can use SMNP for remote control, or it has the 25 dB connector, or you can just, they make equipment to hook, you know, through the network. Of course, they have great GUIs for internet control as well.
Dominic, for the remote control, how have you guys got this one hooked up to your Burke?
This one is configured through SMNP.
Really?
Yes.
That's cool.
It's very cool.
I'd love to play with more of that. I haven't played much.
I mean, everything. The commands, the metering, the status, just everything you want to know on.
Wow. Tell me about plumbing work, taking these transmitters to a switch, right?
Right. We have an RF switch in the back. Which both transmitters go into. We have an output for the end going up to the antenna. It's currently adapted to go to 5-inch line, which we'll replace with the 3-inch. And then there's a fourth port that can go to the aux antenna, which we don't have hooked up yet. We still got the cover over that. So once we get on the new line for that, it'll go directly into the switch as well. So we can still work on the other one if one's down and be able to not have to switch back and forth.
Yeah.
To test it. We just shut one down, turn this one on, see if it's okay, and I'll work on it as we need to.
I did mean to ask you that earlier. You're replacing the old transmission line, which was sized for a higher transmitter power output with a slightly smaller line, right?
Right. I usually, if it's 30 to 32 kilowatts, is as much as I like to run on 3-inch line.
Yeah.
Then there's 4-inch line, which will go up to about 40, 45 maybe. I mean, the specs say it'll go forever, but the specs also say that 7/8 line will do 9 kilowatts, and it will for about 5 seconds. But so with us running 54 kilowatts, they went to the 5-inch line.
Gotcha. Now, we're in a little bit of a rural area. There are nice homes on the way up here, but tell me about internet access. I do see a 4G modem up there, but you've got some better stuff up here too, don't you?
Yes. In fact, we have two fiber trunks in here. One is from the company named WOW, and the other is from AT&T.
And what method are you using for your studio to transmitter link?
Well, we're using a microwave right now. It's a digital STL made by Gates Air.
HD-Link.
Yeah, gotcha. It's HD-Link, and it teleports the audio, and it's capable of teleporting data. And we're just right now it's set up for digital audio.
Cool. Now, we're in northern Alabama. I would imagine that you don't get a lot of snow here, but you do get some ice storms from time to time.
Yes. In fact, back in January, we had a bit of a winter event here. About 3 inches of snow fell up here.
Oh, yeah.
And we stayed on the air. Oddly enough, the transmitter folded back just a little bit, not much. And that was the old transmitter, by the way. It stayed on until maybe 3 days after the real cold ended. And temperatures were in the 30s, and I had to come up because of it got cold itself, and the room was like 40 degrees in here, and yeah. I just had to restart it. It was no problem.
Tell me a bit more about, now we've talked about removing the old transmitter, and you mentioned this one's a lot lighter, so it was easier to get in. What are some of the concerns about leveling it up and setting it in place and kind of making sure you've got all the right availability of AC power and that kind of thing? How do you plan for that, and how do you execute it?
Well, I will hand the details of the installation to Robert, but for moving it, it was really the moving company that made it easier. I just basically pointed to them. Now, knowing that the floor is not going to be perfect, we like to use some stock lumber just to cushion the load and balance it, just give a little leveling, if you will.
Yeah.
So once that was in place, then Robert came in and did his planning and then took over.
Talk about your planning process.
Well, with these, they are very light. As long as the modules are shipped separately.
Ah, okay.
The power supplies are shipped separately.
So, like your dresser at home, you take the drawers out.
Yes.
Okay.
You take the drawers out. And then, with a guy my size, I can lean this back and I can walk it.
Ah.
Or I use gas pipe from Home Depot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And just roll it.
Yeah.
And I even bought a roller on Amazon that does great too if I need it. But then you have to have these, this far apart. There's little braces inside that has a number 8 screw that you loosen, put it in, tighten it down. So that makes these be the exact same height, exact space apart. You have to then run the electrical from here into this.
Okay.
You try to make these, unlike the old transmitters, these transmitters pull air from the front.
Oh, okay.
And exhaust either the top or the back. We have vented doors on this one, so it'll go out the back and the top. They also make it with solid doors, so you can force it all to the top.
Okay.
So you have to make sure you have air coming from the front. Most sites have it coming from the back. I mean, every time, because those old transmitters pull air from the back, exhaust it out the top. So that's one of the big things you have to make sure you're ready for, or that air is circulating enough to where you can keep it cool. And then without the harmonic filter up the top, all you got to do is just have clear for your plumbing.
Okay, so any harmonic filtering is internal, or it doesn't? Okay.
Yes.
It's not external like like most tube transmitters were.
Right. The harmonic filter, the directional coupler, everything is inside the box.
Okay. Wow. And what about your AC power? Are you using the same power that fed the old transmitter, or did you run something new?
We ran new line, new side. The old one had number one. With this, you know, we only needed 3-aught for this because we went from 200 amps to 175. And then we, you know, ran, of course, the ground wire to go with it. And then we made sure we had copper strap, which we have 4-inch copper strap run into it as well.
All right. What's the procedure when you punch the on button the first time? Like, are you nervous? Do you need a cigarette? How does this work?
You don't need the broom handle anymore. I'm sure a lot of guys that remember, you know, especially with some of those old CCAs and McMartins, you know, use the broom handle so you'd be by the door. With this, I mean, it's gradual. I mean, you hit the on button, make sure your exciter's on, then you turn your main on, and it just slowly ramps up.
Okay.
And you go in and tell it what your TPO needs to be. And then the one thing that I have to get used to with these, about once a quarter, you have to calibrate your transmitter.
Oh, okay.
You have to reboot it, basically.
Oh, okay.
There's a procedure to go in and calibrate it and tell it, you know, because your TPO will drift. I had a transmitter that was licensed for 22.5. And after about 2 years, somebody said, well, it's only doing 7.5 kilowatts out, but the front says 22.5. They hadn't calibrated. So it thought it was still doing 22.5, but it wasn't. So I tell my guys to do that about once a quarter.
Now, this station, WZYP, I believe you told me you're not doing any HD on this station, but this transmitter can be ordered that way, right?
Yes. The exciter, all it takes is the X-Gen card being installed in the exciter, and then you order the importer-exporter.
Yeah.
And you can do it in the field. I've done several in the field with their tech support. But, yeah, it's very simple to do, actually.
And so this got turned on for the first time what day?
Actually, it was day before.
Wednesday.
That's when I saw the post. The social
12:30 Wednesday.
12:30 in the afternoon or in the morning? Oh, wow. Just up in the middle of the day.
Yes. We had them on. We have a little small auxiliary transmitter that we kept them on with while we tore out all the plumbing and redid it.
Now, Robert, after doing 60 of these in the past few years, do you still punch the on button yourself, or do you let Dominic do that?
I give him a choice. I offered to let him do it.
He offered, and because it was brand new, and he was more versed on it, I didn't want to be the guy with the broomstick, having that sort of moment there, so I let him have the honors.
So let's think about ongoing maintenance. What, with a transmitter like this that is air-cooled like a tube, but it's a lot less air, certainly lower velocity air. What do you have to do with the, you mentioned the calibration every quarter, but what else do you have to do over time to keep this baby running?
Filters, of course.
Yeah.
You have filters in the back, you have filters in the front, and you just have to keep your air conditioning going.
Yeah.
The good thing is, if you have to, you can get a giant fan, stick it right here, and it'll shoot right through.
Okay. And now think about when you're long retired, and you are too, and I am too, and this thing needs to come out. I wonder what the technology is going to be at that point.
Well, I mean, right now you've got 10 kilowatts in a 6 rack unit space.
Yeah.
So I look, you know, for 20 or 30 kilowatts to be in a 6 to 8 rack space. Some of the new manufacturers in Vegas last year had, you know, they were doing almost 2 kilowatts per module. So you can, what I'm doing with 8 here, you can do with 4. So it's getting smaller and smaller as it goes.
Well, Dominic, you got a new baby to babysit here, don't you?
Yes, I do. But you know, I'm very happy that the HT30 has served us well here. It's behaved very well during the time I've been here. But I'm really looking forward to the new transmitter.
Robert, I'm glad that Cumulus has taken the idea to replace transmitters. And is this helping with the electricity bills?
In some cases, the one thing about these solid state transmitters, the higher to your max power that you run, the better efficient it is. So we're not, to get 72% efficiency, we've got to run 30 kilowatts.
Yeah.
But the air conditioning is not as bad.
Yeah.
You still need it, but it's not as bad. We get these with warranties. That the biggest thing is the warranty. Which, you know, we haven't had any major problems with any of the transmitters we've installed, but from any of the manufacturers over the last few years. But that warranty's nice to have.
Now, I'm guessing that if you are replacing a transmitter, don't call Robert, because he's got probably 60 more to replace in the next few years.
You know, it depends on how much money you got.
Yeah. Well, Dominic, you got a good transmitter here to take care of.
I do, and you know something, the efficiency and just having the peace of mind knowing that I have something new here that is going to last a long time, and I can focus on other things.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
and we do want to say Bobby Dodson, who's our regional engineering for this area, and our director of engineering in Memphis, was here. He had to go home yesterday. But he was a big part of this as well.
Thanks,
so we want to throw him in there, too.
Thank you, Bobby. All right.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. It's been a great tour, and I appreciate your time and your talent. Thanks for sharing with us. I'm Kirk Harnack on location here just north of Huntsville, Alabama. What's the name of this mountain again?
Capshaw Mountain.
Capshaw Mountain at WZYP. Great call letters. We'll see you next time on Twerps.
And there you go. Wow, that was a lot of fun. And thanks to Robert Combs and Dominic Mitchum for being such terrific hosts. And, of course, stellar engineers. Robert has been doing this for so long. Not just transmitters, of course, but we had Robert on years ago with a backstage at the CMA Awards, where he showed all the radio gear that they were using then. That was back in the ISDN days. Chris Tarr, I wonder if you might have a comment on that conversation or installation. What do you think?
That was really, really nice looking. And it's interesting because I just went through that a couple of times. So everything he said was spot on. So it was good to watch. And I'll tell you, they're going to be so much happier with that than the dual 30s. So I'm looking forward to how that's going to work out for them.
There's one shot I didn't get to B-roll into there. Dominic held up one of the power tubes from the 30 kilowatt transmitter, and we got a good look at that, but I didn't have a good place to B-roll that in. So, but you know, for these young folks out there who haven't seen a transmitter tube, it was pretty impressive. I think it was a 4CX20,000.
That sounds
right. About right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. The 20 uses the 15,000. So yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, Chris, you have some video to show, and I've got pictures to show. If we have time, we're going to get to yours first. Hey, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech. It's our episode number 689. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tarr, and we have we'll be back with some more here in just a minute. Right now, I want to tell you about this great product from Inovonics. It's something that really, we all need this kind of solution. It's for your EAS. It's your EAS receivers. You're supposed to listen over the air to your whoever your assignment is. Maybe it's an LP1 designated station. Maybe it's a station that retransmits that. Whatever it may be, could be an FM station. Could be a couple of FMs, an FM and an AM. And probably NOAA weather radio is going to be in that list of things that you're supposed to monitor at your federally licensed broadcast station for EAS purposes. Well, Inovonics has this, their brand new 677 triple tuner. There it is, the model 677 triple tuner. It is now shipping, so it's actually made of obtainium now. It's an EAS monitor receiver in a compact half rack package. It's got three built-in discrete frequency agile receivers, and each one can be AM or FM or NOAA. NOAA weather radio. So you don't have to have, you know, one of each or even order it, some particular way. It's flexible. Each receiver has a balanced mono XLR audio output to serve as an EAS monitor or off-air monitor. If you need to, use one of these to monitor your off-air station, your station's off-air, you can do that too. It has an easy front panel setup with jog wheel menu navigation. And on the back panel, it's got six rear panel GPOs. They can be user assigned to alarm functions. And of course, it has a web interface. And I'll tell you, Inovonics does such a great job on their web interfaces. It provides control and monitoring remotely. You can browse to this and listen to the radio. You can listen to these receivers, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do. You can listen, remotely by that web stream. It also has SNMP fully supported. Chris Tarr is over there doing a little happy dance because he likes that. And someday the rest of us will figure that out and we'll like it too. So check this thing out. This is the model 677 from Inovonics. Yeah, good stuff. There's a product review available of this online. If you go to their website, what Suncast has been showing, the Inovonics, you can see a review from Jeremy Priest, who's the director of engineering for EMF. He's put some of these in and got a great review there. So check this thing out. Of course, you can get it from your favorite supplier and mine, Broadcasters General Store. The website, bgs.cc. Go there, get your best price. Give them a call, say, hey, save me some more money. Get your sharp pencil out, as my friend Sam Phillips used to say. They'll get you the best price and tell you when delivery is going to be, help you out in every single way at Broadcasters General Store. Hey, I just had a conference call this morning with Broadcasters General Store and Jessica Shute. Hey, Jessica, thanks for all your hard work and informing broadcast engineers, when stuff's available, best price you can get on it, things like that. Really appreciate Broadcasters General Store. All righty, it's Kirk Harnack and Chris Tarr talking about transmitters. That was a new transmitter we just saw. A new Harris, Gates Air, sorry, old habits die hard, don't they, Chris? That was their 30 kilowatt model. Chris, you've been doing some transmitter installations. I guess, like Robert Combs, you haven't stopped. So
no,
what's going
no,
on?
No, I just on your keep life? Doing it. Well, first, yeah. I watching your video of driving up the mountain there, it reminded me that I did a video not too long ago of one of my sites, and people think of the Midwest as being flat. And I did this video just to kind of show that it is actually not the case.
10 Bluffs Drive in Minnesota.
Ooh.
Up to our Minnesota tower. Look at that road. That doesn't look too bad, right? That looks like it's pretty drivable. Nothing wrong with that. Oh, wait. That's not our road. This is our road. All right, so let's go. See if we can get up here. Oh, all right. So we start heading up this way. Try to keep my hand steady. Whew. This is why we have four-wheel drive. All right, so we got, so far so good. But let me show you this. That's the edge right there. Go a little bit farther here where it really gets close to the edge. So yeah, you can see right there, you're having a bad day if you go off that side. All right, so here we go. We'll continue on up the hill here. All right. Oof. And we're moving. Oh, got a little moss growing in here. Get some grass. Oof-ta. Oh, man. Much we're actually getting bounced around here. So, here we go. Still got, a bluff on this side and a total dropout on that side. Again, if you're sliding down this in the winter like I've done, here's another great example of it just goes right down into the ravine.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
No, it's a steep
down here
drop off.
Winter, and you're pretty much white knuckling. All right, so we're getting
there. There went my exhaust, probably.
All right. So we come around this corner here, and we go up a little hill, go over some more bumps. Again, that's why, it's really important here to have four-wheel drive. Because it's really not even a road. It's more of a... And you can't see the bumps because of all the leaves. It's really more of a path. So, oh, look. Look, the road ends. We must be at the top. Nope. We got more to go. All right, so here we go. Oh, by the way. Here, let me hold on the window and hold this out to see if you can see. I don't know if you can actually see that, but once again, it goes right down into the ravine. All right, so here we go. Continue up the hill here.
We're getting close. We're getting close.
All right. Oh. Okay. Oh, up the hill. The hill. I'll turn around. It's hard sometimes just to keep things on the road here. All right, so here we go. Oof. Look at that. Did we make it? Nope. Okay. Gotta go up over the rocks. Ugh. And up some more.
Oh my
goodness. Here we
go. Now we're almost there.
Going up this part of the trail. And we're moving. Going up the trail.
Why is this so much fun?
Here. It's kind of nice.
And I love the sound effects. I love the grunts. You know, we all do this.
We get going.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, on behalf of the vehicle, you know, we're grunting.
I'm just trying to hang on. Trying to hang on at that point.
I hear you.
All right.
Have we made it? Are we there yet? Yes. We are finally here.
The green grass of home.
There's the building, and there's the tower. I hope you had lots of fun.
There we go.
Beautiful.
So I just wanted to show that just because it's people sometimes think the Midwest, it's out in the middle of a farm field. Not always. Now imagine doing that like in the rain or the snow or, you know, it's just crazy, which is, again, it's why I have a Jeep, because I got to be able to get up there and do those things. So anyway, I just figured I'd share that real quick. So transmitters, what I originally was going to talk about here, with tube transmitters, the tubes are getting, as you know, Kirk, they're getting harder and harder to find. And when you can find them, they're expensive. So, So we've been trying to get solid state transmitters at all of our sites. Well, you know, when you've got all these stations, you can't always buy new. I mean, we'd love to, and we have bought a couple of new ones, but we just can't afford to outfit all of them with brand new solid state transmitters. So what we're finding now is some of these older solid state transmitters are getting retired. Either they were, the one I'm going to talk about in a minute was actually used as an HD transmitter in a high level combined system. So, you know, there are some of these things that are starting to come up. I had another one that was out in Kansas that I bought on a station that ended up going off the air. What we've been doing is we've just been patient. And as soon as an opportunity comes up, I jump at it. Now, our friend Paul Jellison, I know you know, out in Cincinnati, had a 5 kilowatt BE transmitter. An FMI 201, which is basically, you know, I think it's a kilowatt and a half HD, 3 kilowatts analog. They had just pulled out because they replaced it with a low-level transmitter, and he was selling it at a great price. So I bought it, drove a van out there, and picked it up, and brought it home, and we're going to put it on the air. The 10-kilowatt, that's a whole other story. I drove a big, huge truck out to middle of nowhere, Kansas, and picked that up,
One's
on the air now. Yeah, that one's on the air now. I also bought another one from Las Vegas and had it shipped. So, you know, the key, though, is there's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of junk. So, you know, you really have to be careful about, you know, what you're doing with these transmitters and do your homework. I know for the, especially like the Las Vegas one, I know that Nautel has really good records. So I called Jeff Welton and I said, hey, can you check the service records on this transmitter? And, you know, tell me if this has been in a bunch of times or, you know, if there's been a lot of support tickets open. And Jeff's like, nope, there's been one in all the years.
Wow.
It's like, wow, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So I made the arrangements to do that. And then, you know, the one in Kansas, I had them show me a very good video and show me where it was living so that I knew kind of where it was stored. And then Paul right. actually has a rig set up in his shop where he can plug it in and turn it on. So I don't think we spent more than on all of those transmitters. I think it may have been $16,000 total.
Let's tell you what, I know we've only got another 15 minutes max in the show. And that's our usual practice of going overtime a bit, but why don't we talk for a minute about when you're buying a new transmitter, not too many things to consider with regard to expected longevity. It may not be particularly known.
Sure.
But when you're buying a used transmitter, you know, what do you look for? You can't exactly take it to the used transmitter mechanic and have them give it a thorough once over. That's kind of your job as an engineer. I wonder if we might talk about some of the things, just for a second on the new transmitter. I don't know. You might want to avoid serial number 1 or 2 or 10. you might want to wait till they've kind of wrung those things out. And right. sometimes you can't be avoided, right? I installed serial number either 1 or 2 of a 50 kilowatt Nautel in Memphis, Tennessee, and it was fine. It was really fine. Couple tweaks here and there over, you know, some early growing pains, but not much at all. It was actually quite good.
Sure.
When you buy a used transmitter, you go ahead and take off here in a second, but you know, make sure that no engineer has gone in there and like cut a wiring harness and rewired some stuff. There's no need for that. I've seen that done to transmitters in the South, maybe elsewhere too, but well, it didn't work, so we simplified the control ladder. No thanks. Just hands off of that. Don't need that. Also, there's companies that have gone out of business, like Energionics. Sure. I know a lot of people have Energionics stories. From my experience, not so bad, really. You know, I knew and liked Bernie Wise, you know, the mm-hmm. proprietor, and he sent me on a few good jobs. But other than that, Chris, what are mm-hmm. some things that what might be a hard no in terms of the transmitter's condition or age or manufacture, anything like that? And what's a maybe we need to check this out?
Sure. Well, a maybe is I bought an HT10, and I can't remember now where it was from. It was at a public station of some sort, and we were only looking for a backup transmitter, actually a backup to a backup at a site that we had, and this one became available for a reasonable price, and it had some work done. I mean, it's an older HT10, but we knew that we have the guys that can kind of whip that back into shape. So for that price and the condition it was in good condition, but it obviously was in life for a long time in service, and so, you know, it's going to need a little work. That was an okay. You know, the one I just got from Paul, that was a definite yes. Kansas was a definite yes. Las Vegas was a definite yes. I think, you know, you have to use common sense. You know, in the cases of the three solid state transmitters that I bought, I talked to the people first on the phone, got a feel for kind of how they, you know, Paul, I knew, so that was, you know, we all know Paul, so that was not a big deal. But in terms of Kansas and Vegas, you know, talk to them and get a feel for, you know, the kind of person that they are and where the transmitter lived. You know, if something was in a bad situation in the first place, you probably want to pass. You also want to find out why they're getting rid of it. You know, in the case of, for example, you know, this older Nautel that was in Reno, you know, why are you getting rid of it? And it was very simple. He's like, yeah, we got an upgrade. I need more power, more TPO. So we're retiring this one and get another one. Great. I mean, that's, you know, that's what I like to hear. And then you do your research. You know, most transmitters, if it's something that's in a current manufacturer, you can call that manufacturer, give them the serial number and get all of the, you know, what parts have been ordered, what you know, what has been opened for support and that sort of thing. And sometimes they'll say, well, you need to, you know, I need to get permission from the owner. And if, you know, if they don't give you the permission, then that's another red flag. You know, the hard no's are going to be things that, you know, are you just look at them and they're dusty and scratched up and obviously not well taken care of. Also, if they're kind of dodgy about, you know, questions that they should know the answers to, because you also don't want to have something like a middleman who bought it from somewhere and is just flipping it. You know, ask the questions that really ascertain, you know, how long was it in service? You know, have you had any problems with it? You know, the kinds of questions that the, you know, an owner of a transmitter or an engineer of a transmitter is going to know the answers to. So those are the big things. And then also, you know, when you go to do this, you got to think about shipping because that's also a cost. Now, in the case of Paul's thing in Cincinnati, it's a short drive for me. So I hopped in a minivan and went down to a small transmitter, went down there, loaded, you know, he and I loaded it up and it came back. For the 10 kilowatt in, out west in Kansas, I had to get a U-Haul and go out there. But again, you also need to get straps and everything else for this because you don't want it bouncing around and, you know, you want to make sure that it's packed up. And then for Reno, I actually hired a company out in Reno that went and professionally packaged the transmitter and put it on a pallet. And then I used a less than load shipping company to ship it from Reno to me. And even with that, you know, that I think in the end, that was about $3,500 in packing and shipping. But in the end, it's still way cheaper than a solid, you know, than a new solid state transmitter. And you got to remember with solid state, generally, if it's a, you know, if it's a mature model, like I wouldn't go and buy, you know, whatever those are, TTLs or whatever, you know, the really old first gen digital stuff. But, you know, this is one of the gray faced Nautel FMs and they, you know, they have a really good solid history. And so, you know, when I did that and I called Jeff and I got the information, even at, you know, with the shipping and everything else, I think I was in under $10,000. And that's a steal for that. I mean, I've had it on the air now for 2 years. I've never had a problem with it. You know, same thing with the 10 kilowatt from Kansas, that's been on well over a year now without a single failure. So, you know, use your head, you know, and don't expect that, you know, I'm trying to think of a good way to put this. If you're looking for a tube transmitter, I would be very hesitant to buy those used. Let me put it that way. Because there's a lot of junk out there and generally somebody's getting rid of a tube transmitter because they're sick of the problems or sick of the cost of the tubes or something like that.
And so many tube transmitters, frankly, would put up with a lot of lack of care.
Right.
And so they finally decide to sell it. You might, I'm not saying all tube transmitters like this at all, but a good percentage of them have a lack of care.
Yes. And I would also say what has helped us a lot too, is we're really easy to work with. And, you know, we don't call and immediately go, well, I want you to sell it for $5,000 less and, you know, playing hardball and that sort of thing. And in fact, that's really done us well because in the Kansas one, one of the power supplies was bad. And they told us that they were up front. They said, hey, listen, you know, we've got a bad power supply on this just for selling it with that, just so you know. And yeah, it's no big deal. It turns out, you know, we got along so well that before I got there, he had shipped it out to BE to get it replaced on their dime. So by the time I got back, there was a power supply waiting for me that I paid for.
Nice.
So,
nice.
You know, be nice. And, you know, you'll get a lot more information that way if they like you. Again, it's just all about the homework. If something doesn't feel right, walk away.
By the way, I'll save my tip of the week for after our last commercial break. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech, Kirk Harnack, Chris Tarr, and we're just about done talking about transmitters. But we do have a tip of the week. I got one that's absolutely true, and it'll really help you out if you don't do it. Oh wow, okay. Our show is brought to you in part by Angry Audio. Don't get mad, get angry, and talk to Chris Tarr because he's going to tell you about something at Angry Audio. Chris, what you got?
Ah, yes. Angry Audio, my friends. I love those guys. Once again, we're going to talk about their Chameleon, mostly because, again, somebody else online, they keep talking about these things. It's just it's a huge hit. We've got the C-Level, which is the processor for On Air. They've got the other C-Series, which is, they've got the C6S, which is software, the C4, which is for streams, C3 for your headphones. These processors are fantastic. And what they do is they take the place of the now defunct Aphex Compellers and the Ariannes. And they do a way better job than those boxes anyway. You take any modern processor or even older processors, and one of the weak spots is always the AGC on these boxes. Mm. And they're usually single band. They're usually kind of, they're an afterthought because it's just something that's always been there and they're easy to design. And so they don't really put a lot of effort into that. So that's usually the weak spot. And especially when you're taking your audio and before you multiband it, you're putting it through a wideband AGC. So why would you want to do that? So what this is, it's a multiband AGC. It's very transparent, very musical, and it just adds this dimension to your sound. And so what I do on my processors, I turn off the AGC and I use that ahead of the processor. And I'll tell you what, the first day we had it on the air, we had one of our programming people and the station owner in the car, and they were like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? I mean, I'm hearing things in these songs I've never heard before. And this was, and this was audio that was being shipped up over fiber from, almost the entire state away. And we're sitting there in the car and it's just the fullness and all of the audio, just the quality was fantastic. So this is, and not only on the air, but they have the version for the streaming that does just as well. They've got the software version that's great for, if you want to put together a computer for processing, the C6S is good for that as well. So, get yourself into the modern times and get yourself audio processing that is, it's clean, it's modern, it sounds great, and it's going to help you solve that problem. AngryAudio.com, check them out. They don't not only do the processing, but they have all other kinds of gizmos and gadgets to make your job easier. So, when you need to get it done, get angry at AngryAudio.com. See, I already lost my voice. AngryAudio.com, that's going to happen. I keep talking.
Hey, thank you, Chris.
I have been drinking.
Our show.
We talked about this. I don't drink.
Our show is also brought to you by Max Connect Wireless. And these days it's becoming more and more ubiquitous that you have internet at a transmitter site. And there's so many things that you can do with internet at the transmitter site, but you can't get it everywhere yet. So that's where Max Connect Wireless comes in, not only for internet for the transmitter site, but also for remote broadcasts, live remote sporting events. Maybe internet goes out at your radio station and you got to have it. You need a backup. Here is John Takak to tell you something good about Max Connect.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
They keep adding features to the Max Connect Wireless service. So to get the latest on what's going on with Max Connect Wireless and how they can help you with even faster speeds these days, go to the website. It's maxconnect.com. I know it's spelled funny, M-A-X-X-K-O-N-N-E-C-T, because the internet's popular. Or give them a call, and you will get the lowdown on what Max Connect Wireless can do for you. Really reliable. Oh, my goodness, several times. I have, even though, hey, I don't have any Max Connect at any of my transmitter sites permanently because we're able to get either wired or fiber at our transmitter sites. But I've built transmitter sites and haven't got internet there yet. Use Max Connect. That's how we got Oxford, Mississippi on the air with FM, HD1, HD2, and HD3. Got it all going. full remote control, full everything with MaxConnect. And then I had a station in Memphis, Tennessee, a community station, WEVL, and internet was off for 4 days from you know who, Comcast. And so, and it's business service. Yeah. And so anyway, MaxConnect saved the day, drove down there, got them back on the air in a half an hour. And bam, absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And I've done some of the this show, Twirt, with the MaxConnect Wireless. So check them out, maxconnect.com. We'll have a link in the show notes. Good stuff. Okay, Chris, we've just got a minute left. Do you have a tip for us?
I do. MaxConnect, if you can, get a spare one and bring it with you. I had an issue the other day where I lost an internet connection at a translator site. And instead of scrambling around and being off the air, I have one in my car. So I drove over there, popped the MaxConnect in, got it back on the air while I fixed the other stuff. So, you know, I'm always a big proponent of, you know, bring emergency tools with you.
Good tip. And thank, and with our sponsor too. And my tip of the week is if you buy a used tube transmitter that has an external harmonic filter, you know, the big long pipe, maybe it's got a couple little T's on it and does stuff. Okay. You buy one of those, two things. Number one, be sure you get it and bring it with you when you go pick up the transmitter.
Yes.
Otherwise you'll be running illegally. You'll have harmonics. And number two, what happened to me one time was this station was at the high end of the dial and there was some extra center conductor sticking out of this T. And they decided they would hacksaw it off because they didn't need it. Right?
No. <One day. laughs>
And the station that we moved the transmitter to was on the other end of the dial. And the thing needed to go whoop out like this. And let's just say that it got close. But
yeah,
close.
Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it should have had an accommodation for that. But of course, I didn't realize that until we got it all the way back. Another thing is if you're going to put an FM antenna, let's say you buy a used FM antenna and you put it on like an open trailer or even into a U-Haul, put some padding under it. Don't let the antenna,
the
metal is soft. In
there. Yeah. Yep.
And it will rub a hole in the antenna. Ask me how I know.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I've made all the mistakes. All right. Thanks, Chris. We got to go. Thanks for being here. Appreciate it very much.
Happy to be here.
And thanks to Suncast for putting the show together here with me. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. We'll have another great show next week. I don't know from where, from how, but we're going to do something cool. So we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.